Podmoth.
If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello! Welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris, I'm the believer.
I'm Cody, I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we are an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network.
Yay, and this is a full episode.
That it is.
Yes, that thou est are.
What?
I don't know. So we have found a really, I think, a fun paranormal topic.
Yeah.
Some stories, information, and then we'll do our believer skeptic portion.
This is a very interesting topic that Cody somehow fell upon and sent it to me. So
yeah, and it was weird. In researching our last episode, this word came up.
Which it's kind of related.
Yeah, it's kind of related, yeah. And it was weird, so I'll just go ahead and say it.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about poppets. Not puppets, but
poppets.
Not poppers either.
What? And not only gay people use that, I'm sure other people do too.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Other people need to loosen their anuses too.
Anyhow, but poppets. Poppets, yes.
Poppets, yes.
And I'll get into it more as we go into history, but we'll talk about them. Just kind of a brief overview. They are an image.
Yeah, yes.
Of yourself, whether it be a puppet.
Or someone else.
Or someone else.
Yeah.
Or a doll or anything. Like that, or a wax figurine, things like that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And I think and Chris talked about it, but the most popular thing, people have heard of a voodoo doll,
which
that is an example
a type
of a puppet. But that was what I thought was really cool, is that it's actually, voodoo dolls are a subset of puppets, and that's why I thought this was really neat.
And puppets and using puppets in magic is part of sympathetic magic, which I will also talk about as well.
Yeah, which is also super, super interesting. It's going to be really neat. I was so torn, and I talked to Chris because I was like, is there enough on this where we could make voodoo dolls a whole separate? And we could have, but we kind of encapsulate everything here.
Yeah.
So,
but it was cool to find other ones and very difficult at the same time.
It was super,
because voodoo dolls are the most popular.
Yeah. True. Yeah. True. So cool. So should we do drinks?
Food in my case.
Oh, food?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you have?
Oh, so I guess I'm going first.
Yeah.
So I had a difficult time this week doing a drink. I couldn't think of anything that could go with this topic. So I have two stories, and one of them takes place, or it derives, or at least the legend does, from Guatemala.
Okay.
So even though they are traditional throughout the South America, and up here too as well, but they are also popular in Guatemala, I got empanadas.
Oh, wow. He did.
I didn't make them, though. I could have, but the traditional guatemalteco empanadas are called dobladas, and mm-hmm. they usually have a cheese in them.
Oh, yum.
But this was a weird synchronicity. Today, I was also looking up, and they also make a type of empanada that's popular in Guatemala called empanadas de manjar de leche. So they're filled with a cream custard.
Yum.
But in the article that I read, he said that those are very popular during Holy Week.
No way.
And Easter. So yeah, during the empanadas de manjar de leche are typical of Guatemala and are usually eaten during Lent and Holy Week.
Wow.
So it all kind of came full circle.
And you know, our mini-sode also with the mention of nails, and we've had a couple kind of irreverent mentions of it as well.
So I have pineapple and apple, and I cut them in half so you can have half and half.
Wow.
As
oh,
well.
Well, thank you. Oh, yeah. That's nice. So then, as he's divvying out the stuff, I will go into mine. Mine is also, I can't give you crap at all for taking something from a story like that, because mine is also taken from a story versus the topic as a whole.
Okay.
They had the Voodoo Ranger IPA, but mm-hmm. we were in Voodoo and IPAs are disgusting, so I wanted something I'm going to drink. So my second story is about a fisherman and a fish, And so I got a, it's a, the brand is like Big Kahuna, but it's the Big Wave. And the, it actually has a label, has people in a boat. Okay. And so it very much reminded me of fishermen fishing, water, waves. It's connected. No judging. He's giving me a look.
Mm-hmm.
It works. They have some history going on?
Yeah. So history. Poppets are also known as Moppets, Mommets,
Pippi. Muppets?
Moppets.
Do you think that like that's how Muppets?
Probably.
Oh, interesting.
Pippies and, of course, puppets. The word poppet is an old Middle English term which the word puppet is derived from. So it just evolved into puppet.
Yeah. Okay.
It means small child or doll and is nowadays a British term of endearment for a young child or girl.
Oh, now that you say that. Oh, a puppet. It's my lovely little thing.
You have a terrible...
It's because my mouth is
I
full.
Apologize to all our English British listeners out there because
it's
is...
only because I'm eating.
The kind of poppets we are talking about today are used in folk magic, such as voodoo, as well as in witchcraft and in the past in paganism. Poppets are dolls that are a representation of a person that is used to either cast a spell on the person or to assist that person through magic, such as like healing, love, things like that. Voodoo dolls are probably the most familiar, as Cody said, of the poppets, but of course, they're not the only ones. That being said, voodoo dolls are commonly misconceptualized thanks to popular culture. Movies and books have shown us that the way these dolls, quote-unquote, work is by sticking pins in them or by hurting them in some way to affect the person it represents, but that's not really how it works. But I won't get into
that. Tell
that,
to my second story.
Oh, okay. Well, then we'll see.
Ooh.
All right, so...
Puppet babies, fuck your dreams and you.
Anyhow, poppets themselves can be made from all kinds of materials, such as carved roots, grain or corn, fruit, paper, wax, potatoes, clay, and pretty much anything that you can use to make a likeness of a person. So poppets can be utilized in what is called sympathetic magic or imitative magic, which is a magic based on imitation or correspondence.
You see my face right now. I'm like, what the fuck? Correspondence.
Yep.
Okay.
You see, imitative magic uses effigies, fetishes, or poppets in order to, again, cast the spell or help the person through magic. And for clarification, fetishes are a human-made object that are thought to have supernatural powers over others.
Mm, okay, yeah.
As it relates to correspondence, the idea is that a person can influence something based on its relationship or resemblance to another thing. For example, it was thought walnuts were good for the brain since they resembled
a brain.
Organ. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see. That's cool.
Yeah. In some cultures, it is believed that instead of creating an image of a person, influence can be placed on someone just by using something they have touched or used themselves.
It's like a cucumber is...
I thought you were going to say a Q-tip, but that too. This kind of magic has been in practice for thousands of years. And in what I read, cave paintings are thought to have possibly been used for sympathetic or imitative magical purposes.
Really?
But of course, because of documentation, nobody can prove that.
Sure.
Yeah, it's theorized. Yeah. There is one of the earliest known entirely human figurines from the Paleolithic era called Venus of Hohlfels, which have been theorized to have been used for fertility rituals. Imitative magic was used in ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia, where it was widely popular. One of these ancient spells, said to be the oldest on record, was on a Mesopotamian clay tablet. The spell used a clay sculpture and was used as a cure for a dog bite, in which the spellcaster would take clay, rub it on the dog bite, and then form that clay into a sculpture of the dog. Then they would... say an incantation or prayer over the figure and put it outside to face the sun because the belief was that as the clay dried, so too would the dog bite healing
it.
Oh
my God. So this dog bite then is full of like dog blood or blood and spit and like someone's leg hair and stuff all in this poppet?
I guess.
On this dogget? Okay.
Yeah. In ancient Egypt, it was believed that all statues and images contained a part of the person that they represented. So it kind of reminds me of that, you know, folk belief that taking a picture will take a piece of your soul.
Oh, yep, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. In practices in ancient Greece and Rome, there were small dolls that they used for cursing spells called kolosi. In this practice, the dolls were named from the person it was being used on. Then it was melted or broken and then taken to a burial ground.
Oh, wow.
Here it was believed that the spirits of the restless souls would then give the spellcaster what they desired. In this tradition, people would sometimes make wax figures of themselves or ailing body parts and would leave them at a sacred site because they thought with the figure representing them being left at the location would be energized by the spirits, which would in turn cure their ailment.
Okay.
Again, going back to pop culture, it has stigmatized puppets, implying that effigies are used for more diabolical purposes.
Sure.
But in actuality, puppets can represent almost anything and can be used for whatever intent the spellcaster chooses. And that's a little information on puppets and sympathetic or imitative magic.
Nice. Very nice. Short but very thorough. That was really cool.
Short? I thought it was long.
Well, like it could have been, you know.
Oh, it could have. Oh, yeah.
That could be like a whole episode unto itself.
Yeah.
But that was really cool. So then most of what I saw, especially like my first article, mm-hmm. a lot of it is for good.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too. Like a lot of this was originally used to do good and to help people and, you know, and to bring yourself fortune and good luck and things like that. So for my first story, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some steps on how to use a poppet.
Okay.
So I thought this would be kind of fun. So if you ever have an interest or you want to try this, these are a couple of things you can do and a couple of the spells that you can kind of, I was going to say incantate,
Incantation?
Incantation. Yeah, thank you. The incantations that go with it. So at first I was going to talk a little bit about making the doll, but you pretty much already did. The key takeaway is that you said like they can be made from all this crap. I even have on here that they can be made from Play-Doh. So imagine, you know, that poop factory and you're like out the Play-Doh and then you have like your little turdlet poppet. But whenever it got down to it, said it was like, you know, it could be crocheted or made of wax or clay. But then it was like, if you don't have those, you can use a clothespin or a wooden spoon.
Or pubic hair.
And if or pubic hair that you can draw on. And if they don't have that, they don't have to be three-dimensional. You can just draw on a piece of paper. And so the takeaway is, anything in the world could be a poppet if you want it to be.
Or in modern days, you can just take a picture.
and that's so, and my second story goes into that a little bit. Dun, okay. dun. But you could literally use a pubic hair poppet.
Okay.
A poppet hair. Yeah, I don't even know. So once you have your poppet, so you've made your poppet, mm-hmm. if you make one basically that represents yourself, then you can do a spell for good luck, protection, or health for you.
Yep.
So once you've made it, this is what you're going to do. First, you want to sit quietly and contemplate the poppet. Mm-hmm. Hold it in your hands, so not your butt. Number two, visualize an energetic connection flowing between you and the doll.
Yep.
If you close your eyes, you can feel as if your own being is being incorporated mm-hmm. into the doll.
Okay.
You are one and the same.
Okay, child's play.
Isn't that creepy?
It's like Chucky.
Yeah, it is. Imagine yourself becoming the poppet. Your pubic hair like waddles across the room. Next, ask your doll if it is willing to help you and to be your companion. Mm-hmm. So you've got to get permission from your pubic hair. Then you want to stay quiet and try to sense an answer. If yes, thank the poppet. Mm-hmm. Thank you, pubic hair. That's going to be my example for the whole rest of the story. Then you want to make a tiny offering of food and drink. Just set some tea or cookie crumbs before the pubic hair.
Why not a full cookie?
That's like why you got to be stingy? You're right. Like you get some crumbs. Then remain seated and quiet while you share your hopes and fears silently with the doll. When ready, dispose of the drink and food outside. There you go. The birds will appreciate the crumbs. Then place the doll where you can see it, or if it is small enough, place it in your purse, Chris, and carry it around with you. When you need help or a sign, ask the doll to provide it. When you are unwell, wrap the doll up warm and take care of it as if it is you. Mm-hmm. You'll soon feel better.
Yep.
And then, this is kind of the weird, like the funniest little ending, is if anyone asks you what it is, you just tell them it's a good luck mascot. That's it.
A mascot?
Yeah. And I was like, that's really interesting that actually comes up as a point to do. Like,
if it fits in your purse, who's going to ask you about it? Nobody can see it.
Well, maybe like you're clearing it out, like taking out a tampon or something. Okay. And it just comes out and someone asks. But I'm like, is it bad luck to talk about it? Like, are they introverted? Like the poppets, so they don't want attention? So you can't actually say what it is? Or it's just to prevent you from looking like you might
a weirdo.
Be weird.
Yeah.
But either way, don't tell them what it is. That's important. So then you can also do a healing spell for someone else. First, once you have permission from the person who needs healing,
go ahead and create your puppet of them. So you have to have permission. So I'm imagining, like, if you're at a hospital wanting to help people, like, or you're at a Catholic church, you know, you're probably not going to get a lot of sympathy or approval there. But once you have their approval, you hold the poppet in your hands and close your eyes. Imagine the recipient of the healing as whole and well. What does it feel to you personally that the person is healed? Really get into the feeling of it, it says. If you can, center that feeling on your solar plexus. I forgot where that's at. I should have looked it up. It's like, is that your...
your solar plexus?
Yeah, is that your, like, your butt? Your, that's your, like, middle of your chest, right? So then, either way, you got your solar plexus. Close your eyes. And then, at that part, you're going to...
It's right here.
Oh, okay, it's like the middle of your stomach. So it's kind of the middle of your body.
If you think under your heart.
Yeah. Under your heart.
Yeah.
So then you're going to say this charm three times. Their name, I see you happy and healthy, healed and whole. Maybe you be fit and well. May you be fit and well. From your toes to your soul, from your toes to your whole. After you repeat that, say, as I speak, so must it be. And it's done. You put the doll aside in case you need to speak the thing again. So that is supposed to offer protection for the person. Now, once you're done with all this, you have to cleanse your poppet if you want to use it again. So if you're using the same one for the same thing, then just go ahead and repeat it over and over. But if you want to use this poppet and you're like, well, I don't want to pull out another pubic hair because it kind of hurt. I just want to use the same one. Well, you need to cleanse it and then you can use it for other things. And here's how to do that. You want to leave it on a shelf so the light from the full moon bathes it. Or you can wrap it in cloth with a cleansing crystal, such as quartz. Or you can smudge it with smoke from dried sage. You can pass it, and it says in parentheses, carefully over a burning candle. Can you imagine, like, your healing poppet of your friend is in the hospital, just goes up in flames? They'll be like, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry. That is very bad luck. And it even talks about stuff like that. Like, you know, if you... if you have one of those and you accidentally hurt it or damage it, that can actually be really bad. You can also rinse it under a cold faucet for a doll that is suitable for that sort of treatment.
Okay.
Yeah, and so then once that's done, you are free to use the poppet again for your next ritual. Yeah. And there you have a couple of ideas for things that you can do with poppets.
Interesting.
Yeah. What's the harm in trying, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mr. Skeptic. So.
That's it. We're on pubic hair.
For my first story, I am taking you to Guatemala to talk about a little more atypical effigy or effigies. I am talking about Guatemalan worry dolls, or as they are known, they're muñeca quitapena.
Oh my God, that was great. I so brain farted and I was like, wow, Guatemala. And I was like, oh, wait, we already talked about this.
So the worry dolls are handcrafted dolls that are dressed in traditional Mayan clothing that are each about 1/2 to 2 inches tall. These dolls usually come in sets of six and are placed in wooden boxes or cloth pouches. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Why do I know that? I know
you've probably seen them. They were very popular here, like in the 90s.
I've absolutely heard of this. Yeah. Okay, but I didn't know about the set of six thing, which is interesting.
They come in sets of six, one for each day of the week, with the seventh day meant for a day of rest the dolls. The figurines were created many years ago as a way to alleviate children's nightmares or nighttime anxiety. The instructions with these dolls are as follows. Concentrate on your concern or problems when you go to bed. Tell the doll what you want them to take away. Put the doll under your pillow. Caress the doll's tummy a few times so that your sorrows don't hurt it. And in the morning, those sorrows will have disappeared.
Wow. It's almost like a form of prayer.
Yeah. Wow. A variation on the instructions says that the person can tell the dolls their worries and then place them in the cloth pouch or wooden box before going to bed rather than under the pillow. There are a number of legends about how the dolls came to be. One legend goes that there was a Mayan princess called Ixmucane, who was the daughter of the sun god. The sun god gave his daughter a very special gift, the ability to take away people's problems. With that, people started making the dolls in honor of the princess in hopes that they could share their worries and that the princess would listen and solve their problems.
You know, you sit there and, like, I make fun of it, and this empanada is great, by the way, the apple one. Oh, my God.
They're both good,
but,
yeah.
You know, people have their statue of Mary that they pray to, their crucifix that they pray to for help. It's basically the exact same thing.
Remember that when I get to
Believer.
No,
it's already forgotten. Yeah.
And then there's another legend that goes that in Guatemala lived an old man with his daughter Flora, and her two children, Maria and Diego. They were a poor family that lived in a small one-room hut of sorts without water or electricity. The old man had taught his family to farm, but in that current year...
Sorry, I heard fart. Farm. He taught his old family to fart. I was like, what?
To farm. But in that current year, there was a bad drought, which prevented a lot of their crops from growing. Despite no rain, they would wake up each day to tend the fields in hope of turning a crop. For food, Diego and Maria would gather what corn they had, which would be ground in order for their mother to make tortillas. Their mother would also make their clothes by weaving what material they could find together. One night while they all slept, a thief made his way into their home and stole the cloth that the mother had for clothing.
Oh, fucker.
The next day, Maria looked in the basket where her mother kept the cloth to see if there was anything left, but could just find cloth scraps. Maria gathered the scraps and asked her brother to go out and collect small twigs, which he did hesitantly. They worked hard into the night, making tiny dolls and tiny clothes as well as pouches for the dolls to sleep in. Maria remembered a story from her grandfather about a magical doll who would grant wishes. With the dolls she created, she felt that this was true of them, at least for her family's sake, she hoped so. Before going to bed that night, Maria took her dolls and asked them for help for her and her family. She then placed them back into the pouch and put them under her pillow. When she woke up, she found the dolls were out of the pouch and laid out in a circle on a table.
Wow, your minisode story is like just ringing through here.
Despite remembering she had put them under her pillow, Maria convinced herself she must have imagined that. That morning, Maria and Diego gathered the dolls and took them to the market to sell. Upon finding a spot at the market, the shoe seller recognized them and asked where their mother was with her clothes. They told the shoe seller what had happened and told him all they had were the dolls to sell. He looked at them, wondering why anyone would want to buy them. Maria told him they were magic dolls, which the shoe seller laughed at. As the day continued, they hadn't sold any dolls, which began to worry them. As they were preparing to leave for market for the day, a well-dressed man inquired about what they were selling. When Maria said they were magic dolls, the well-dressed man said he could use a little magic and bought them all.
Bought them all?
Yeah.
Oh, that was nice.
The man gave them a lot of money and walked on. Maria looked and saw that the well-dressed man had given them enough money for the family to live on for a year.
Oh, shit.
After buying food for the night, they made their way home and told their mother and grandfather what happened. The mother stated that it didn't sound like magic. Despite her skepticism, after being ill for a few days, she was starting to feel better, and even better yet, it began to rain. That night, as Maria was getting ready for bed, she found a pouch of dolls in her pocket that she was sure she had sold to the well-dressed man. In that pouch, she found a note that said, "Tell these dolls your secret wishes. Tell them your problems. Tell them your dreams. And when you awake, you may find the magic within you to make your dreams come true." And there you have it. The legends wow. of Muñecas Quitapena, or Guatemalan war dolls.
That's so cool. That ending was so Disney.
That would be a cool Disney story.
Yeah, put all your worries, blah, blah, blah.
Get on to that, Disney.
When you wish upon a doll. Okay. That was the urban legend?
That's the one of the legends, yeah.
Talk about so real and specific. Like, it wasn't something like, you know, go out and suck a jewel out of someone's butthole. Like, this was, that could have really happened.
Yeah.
You know, like, and stuff like that has happened.
Yeah, but I mean, these are the legends that are passed down, you know.
I love that. I think that's so nice. And it didn't have something super fantastical, and it was just nice. Yeah. How cool.
Hello, friends. I'm Taya.
And I'm Sammy.
And we're the hosts of the Offbeat Worm podcast.
Come check us out. We talk about so many things.
Spooky things, silly things, and everything in between. Find our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more.
And we'll catch you on the Offbeat.
See you soon.
Okay, well, we're going to take a little turn.
Uh-oh.
We're going to get a little more sinister because, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be talking to you about the voodoo fish. Now, this is a true story with pictures that we'll be able to share and records and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, the true story involves three people.
So one we have, and this is, you know, whenever you read a play and it's like the cast of characters, that's kind of what I did for this because I was getting so confused with all the names. Yeah. So we have Esther. And just think of Esther, you know, Esther's an old lady name. Well, that's an elderly woman in her 90s, but still living in her own home. Roger is Esther's son who lives there with her, and he's in his 60s. And Vivian is Esther's daughter, so Roger's sister, who also lives there. So it's the three of them living in this one house together. Okay. These three things you must remember, or the tale would not be wondrous.
What?
That was totally Christmas Carol.
Oh.
Never mind. Okay. Moving on. Since Esther was so old, she's in her 90s, you know, she was naturally in really poor health. Mm-hmm. Roger, again, in his 60s, but was also, you know, had some ailments of his own. But he had shouldered the burden of caring for Esther, so he cared for his mom in the home. Vivian, although the youngest of the three, had a kind of an evil streak. She was kind of a whore. She apparently refused to help with Esther's care. Now, Roger was out of the house one day, and Vivian saw her chance. Mm-hmm. She told Esther a quote-unquote secret that Roger had confided in her. He said that Esther wasn't going to get any better. He was done taking care of her, and that he was going to put her in a nursing home to rot and die.
What a bitch.
Now, Vivian told her this for a reason, which she said was benevolent, not malevolent, which Chris thinks is good, benevolent. She swore to Esther, so she's to her mom, her own mother, that if she signed the house and everything else over to her, Vivian, the daughter, she would see that Roger couldn't remove her from her beloved home and that she could die there with dignity. So she's like, Mom, give the house to me and I'll make sure you die here. The story worked. Esther signed everything over to Vivian, including power of attorney. Well, naturally, Roger was furious when he found out. After all, he was the one sacrificing his time and his own health to care for his mother. On top of that, Vivian lied. Once Esther signed everything over to her, she put her mother in a nursing home anyway. But now, at this point, she owns everything. So she also then tells Roger to get out of her house. So she kicks both of them out of what is now her house. Bitch. Well, Esther died shortly after that. You know, the old woman. So she died of, well, you would say like, oh, she just died of old age. But the weird thing is that according to medical reports, no cause of death was ever determined. Then another quote unquote tragedy struck. 2 months later, Vivian, the youngest daughter, suffered a ruptured spleen and died unexpectedly. So, and then it turns out that Roger then, you know, later died after that.
Okay.
And so at this point now, all three are dead. Now enter Amanda. Amanda was...
Who the hell's Amanda?
So she's another one of Esther's daughters, but she didn't live there, you know, so she wasn't involved in this. She had her own place, you know, okay. She just kind of was on the sidelines. Well, she inherited the house and everything in it. Mm-hmm. Well, she kind of was aware of some of the shit that gone down. Yeah. So she wanted to sell and be rid of the reminder of all that family drama she had to watch from the sidelines. Mm-hmm. It was while she was cleaning out the house that she discovered the altar. There was a small desk in Roger's room with three or four candles placed across its surface. In the center was a strange box. Before he took ill, keep in mind that Roger was a successful commercial fisherman. And Amanda thought, well, it maybe is something that he came across, you know, during his travels for work. Mm-hmm. So the box, it looked like a jewelry box. Well, inside was a stuffed toy that appeared to resemble a fish. And it was old and faded.
It was a cat toy.
It has like the little squeaker in it.
And has the weed.
Oh, the catnip.
The catnip.
Yeah, and the cat's going crazy. Well, tacked. So that's kind of weird. Well, it gets weirder.
Yeah.
Tacked. So like stuck to this fish, the stuffed fish, were three photographs. Two of which she instantly recognized. Her sister Vivian and her mother Esther.
Okay.
Little stick pins had been inserted into the doll also in various positions. Okay. And there was also a photo of a man that she didn't recognize. So if you think about, you know, it's something you talked about, that if you're thinking about voodoo dolls and poppets, that in some cultures, having a picture taken of you, people don't do it because it can be extremely bad luck, because then there's an effigy of you that can be used. Mm. So that's, you know, what happens. So you have, he has this voodoo doll in his room.
Yeah.
Picture of mom and sis on it with pins stuck in there. So it's like, well, Roger sounds like maybe he wasn't that caring for his mother after all. Well, it may come as no surprise that after she discovered the altar, Amanda's house was plagued with paranormal activity. She ended up hiring a medium because she took it home. She took the stuff home with her. She hired a medium to come in and possibly help any restless spirits move on from the house and to help remove any bad vibes brought about by her brother practicing voodoo in the house with that doll and the thing that she had. Now, the medium explained that the pins were stuck into the fish doll were arranged in a way that would inflict pain on the intended target. Now, here's the shit, and this is what I want you to think about. The medium at this time had no idea about Vivian. She didn't know anything about that death. She basically just saw the fish that that Amanda had brought in. Well, she pointed out and said, one of these pins appears to be in the place of the person's spleen. So I'm guessing that someone here died of an injury of the spleen or something around it.
Yes.
Ah! So, yeah. So that is the gist. And the medium did tell her like how to bury the box in her yard to cleanse it.
Oh, my God.
To enable to end it. But the medium saw that coming. And so the part about this, like all of this is true. Amanda's story is true. Yeah. Now, as far as what killed those people, that is what is up in the air.
Oh, debunk.
And that is the story of the voodoo fish.
That's insane. Where did you find this story? That's crazy.
It was what it was so weird because this was that right there was one of the fastest stories I've ever done. It all came from one source. I searched, found it, and then even searched those people's names and couldn't find another article. But I was like, this is so perfect. It was almost like a weird.
That's a captivating story. That's insane.
Thanks.
All right. For my second story, I talk to you about a tradition and ritual that comes from pre-Christian Ireland, and then, as many pagans' traditions do, became embedded in Christian tradition.
Oh, interesting.
I am talking about Brigid dolls. Like Brigid.
Oh, not Brigid.
In Ireland, it's Brigid.
Okay, but does it have T's?
No, that's the Americanized version.
Oh, because...
Brigid. Like frigid.
This sounds familiar. I think my mom has mentioned this. Okay, tell me.
So before I get to that, first let me tell you about Imbolc.
Okay.
Imbolc is a traditional Gaelic celebration and festival, also called Brigid's Day, celebrated on February 1st, marking the first day of spring. Based on what information can be gathered about the holiday, it is thought that Imbolc was originally a pagan festival in honor of the goddess Brigid, who is associated with wisdom, poetry, protection, blacksmithing, and domesticated animals.
Wow, that's a lot.
The goddess Brigid had two sisters, and I quote sisters, Brigid the healer and Brigid the smith. Because of this, it is believed she might have been a triple deity, which is basically three goddesses in one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Following the forced Christianization of many pagans, Brigid was in a sense Christianized, becoming Saint Brigid, and February 1st became the feast day of Saint Brigid, more so recognized and celebrated in Ireland.
Yeah, my mom has talked about this, and I don't think she knows about this history.
Yeah.
Wow. So there's a saint that actually didn't even necessarily exist as a person.
We don't know for sure.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. That being said, it is also the eve of the day... known as Candlemas in Christianity. Many of Brigid's attributes were carried over to Saint Brigid, so they had a lot of the same powers and prayed to for the same reasons, etc.
Interesting.
Traditionally on Imbolc, Brigid's crosses were made as it was a doll of Brigid called Brigjog. That's the best I could pronounce. I could not find pronouncing, but Brigjog, I'm going to say.
Sounds good. Anemone.
The doll would be paraded from home to home by females who sometimes were accompanied by what they called straw boys. It was believed that Brigid herself would visit a person's home on Imbolc, and in order for one to receive her blessing, they would make a bed for the goddess and leave her food and drink, kind of like Santa Claus.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Additionally, items of clothing would be left outside for her to bless. Considering what she symbolizes, the hope was that Brigid would also protect the homes and their livestock. So back to the Brigid doll. The Brigjog was a doll-like figure that was made from rushes or reeds clad in bits of cloth, flowers, shells, and sometimes jewels. In parts of Scotland, a bright shell or crystal known in English as the guiding star of Brigid was put on its chest. In a different article I read, it was said she was also adorned with ribbons and a small wand made of birch.
Huh.
In some cases, her stomach was also filled with seeds, which symbolized fertility.
Yeah.
As I said before, young females would carry the doll around in procession, dressed all in white to symbolize purity and youth, while singing a hymn to Brigid. In visiting each home, the girls would receive food or more decorations for the doll. When they came to the final home, they feasted in that home with the doll having a place of honor at the table. Following dinner, the girls would make a crib with a mattress of corn and hay called the bride's bed. The doll would then be tucked in under a blanket, and beside her, a wooden club was placed. The crib would then be laid near a door surrounded by lit candles. Before going to bed that night, the women of the house would call out, I'm assuming in Gaelic and not English, "Bride has come, bride is welcome." Or they would just go and open the door and yell into the night for Brigid to enter their house.
I like the whole, you hear hundreds of people, "Brigid!" Yeah. What if like someone named their daughter like Brigid?
Oh, how annoying would that be?
What? Oh my God, it's so dumb.
The following morning, I would look at the ashes from the previous night's fire in hopes of finding an impression of the club.
Interesting.
It was said if the impression was indeed there, that this was a sign that they would have prosperous crops in the coming year.
Cool.
In some places, rather than carrying the doll around, a young girl would take on the role of Brigid, who would be escorted by other girls as they went from house to house. The girl would be crowned in a Brigid's crown, carrying a Brigid's shield and a Brigid's cross, all made from rushes. I don't know about you, but this kind of gives me a midsummer vibes.
It really does. It really does.
Like many pagan traditions, many of these practices have faded out but are still observed in a few places. That being said, many practices have been revived or continued by Wiccans and other pagan-based religions. In modern practices, the dolls can be handmade from easily found material around the home. They are then placed on an altar with candles with the intent of blessing the intent of blessing the coming spring season, as well as welcoming light and fortune to the home. And there you have it, some information on Goddess Brigid, Saint Brigid, and the dolls created based on her.
Wow, I'm so shook. I swear that something, I'm getting like such a tickle in my brain that something happened around Saint Brigid's feast day, either clothes or something that my mom did around February 1st. I'm going to have to talk to my sister and see.
Yeah.
That's wild. That's really interesting. Huh.
Yeah.
Wow, because I thought like All Saints had at least a history, like in fact, but it may not be.
Maybe this is just synchronicity, but you'd have to dig.
I'm going to dig because now I've got to see.
Yeah.
So are we going into believer skeptic?
Yeah.
All right. So interestingly enough, I could not find a specific debunk on like voodoo dolls.
Oh, you're telling me you texted me last night. You said, I don't know how I'm going to do debunk.
Yeah, and I thought it would be, I really thought that was going to be the easiest part because I figured there's going to be all kinds of stuff. But I did find in kind of parallel, and it was like a related topic, I found on this website a really interesting little piece I want to talk to you about. And I really like this one I'm going to be talking about because you hear the words more now, especially in regards to politics.
Okay.
So what I want to talk about is confirmation bias.
Fake news.
Fake news. And that's all around, but how it applies to this. So, and first, imagine you have had a diagnostic test done to determine whether you have cancer. The morning before, you know, your test, you take your protective poppet and you do all the magical steps to protect yourself, you know, all in the hope that the test comes back negative and you don't have cancer. Lo and behold, once you get to the hospital, the doctor beams at you and tells you there was no cancer. Your poppet worked, right? Well, I don't know. What exactly happened here? Like, how do you know the magic worked? More specifically, when did it work? Like, did you actually have cancer until you used the poppet and it magicked the cancer away? Was your test positive for cancer cells until you magicked it to be negative? You know, does it mean that you didn't have cancer at all? You know, like, what exactly does that mean? Like, when did the doll start working? And I find that so fascinating. Now, much more likely is the fact that you never had cancer to begin with, which the test reliably showed, and then all of your magicking, well, was it entirely meaningless? Well, the person who did the ritual will never ask themselves that. From their perspective, the magic worked, and the magic is real. If humans believe something is true, they will tend to interpret reality in a way which preserves the truth of what they believe. And that's what's called confirmation bias. It's a cognitive rule of thumb or a basic part of human thinking which assigns a greater value to those pieces of information which already fit into what you believe. I think that's so amazing. You're not stupid for falling for it. You're human, and you have a human psychological makeup. And I just love that. So this, what I read about that was really kind, because it's like, this is just who you are, but this is what it is.
So they're saying your gullibility is actually confirmation bias.
Yes. It's just you being human. It's all of us. So what if the cancer test came back positive? Does the person who did the magic ritual then sit back and think, oh, well, I guess there's no magic then?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, because confirmation bias plays again. Regularly, when magic does not work, the person tells themselves a story about why it didn't work. Like, oh, I must not have said the words in the right way or in the right order.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, well, the cancer must be destiny, and now I've got to do magic to cure it on top of that. So that's a big thing about confirmation bias. So now if you know about it, this is my debunk comes in. Like, I agree with this totally. Like, I don't think that this really exists. I think that cancer thing, it would always have been negative, and the magic doesn't exist. It's confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would recommend is that then you begin to correct your thinking to prevent it from happening. You can break your cycle of belief and notice that the evidence you have does not merit the conclusions that you make.
Mm-hmm.
But that takes confronting some uncomfortable truths in people about reality. And a lot of people either don't bother or they don't want to. And you know what? I will say in closing with that, here's the thing, really. I can say all that stuff, but if it works for you and you're happier and you're a more content person doing your puppets and believing in it, then I would say it's healthier for you to believe. Mm. Bam.
Wow. That was very interesting.
Thanks.
So with my believer today, I thought I would look at sympathetic magic and why I believe it works.
Cool.
Just like our last episode with protection, spells and magic are all about intent. In making a likeness of someone or something, it is bound to give it some kind of power, as it, of course, will remind whoever is looking at it of that person.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in thinking of the prehistoric cave paintings that are thought to be a form of sympathetic magic, before the hunt, a ritual was performed for a successful hunt.
Okay.
Then images would be drawn of hunters taking down a hunt in hopes of that desired outcome. In this way, the hunter is then put in the mindset, gaining the confidence to do what they are set out to do. According to an article in Psychology Today, quote, to possess the image of an animal ensures a degree of human control over the animal's destiny when it comes to the hunt.
Interesting.
That being said, these types of depictions cause the practitioner to believe the magic will work based on the connection of an image to the thing or the person that it represents. In another article I read, psychologist Stuart Weiss said, quote, the main purpose of everyday superstition is to give a sense of control in circumstances where it's lacking. He says in stressful times, we look to things like magic because it, quote, supports a psychological feeling that you have taken some actions, done something small to regain control. In the same article, Jane Risen, a behavior science professor, says that even a simple symbolic gesture as touching one's heart can be seen as a form of sympathetic magic.
Interesting.
This may be a little crazy take, but we could think of the belief in saints and their power as a type of sympathetic magic. In Christianity, especially Catholicism, saints are looked at and prayed to with the hopes of a desired outcome, such as with St. Bridget. The desired outcome is dependent on which saint you're looking to, such as travelers looking to St. Christopher for safety in their travels. So that being said, I believe sympathetic magic is useful and can be a powerful tool to those who truly believe it, and more so for those who want to have a sense of control. I mean, after all, setting an intent and putting a fair amount of energy into an image is bound to give power to it. That being said, I'll close with this. Just before we recorded, a synchronicity happened to me.
Do I know this?
No.
Oh.
I ran across an image from a post on a page I follow on Facebook that explains it well. It says, quote, intention is everything. Know your heart and then run with that fire.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That was such a good believer, because it even says, even if maybe you don't believe in the magic of it, the psychology of putting so much intent in something can at the very least help you to feel more confident in it. And confidence can always lead to better results.
And taking control.
Yeah, exactly. And we all have those moments where, like, we are praying or asking for something, and just focusing that hard on it can lend you, you know, to work harder or something. That's really cool. I love it.
Yeah. So,
wow, awesome. This was
Oh, this is a great episode. It was so good.
So we don't have any listener stories this week.
And I know.
And I thought I would do something different, or we did. We have had a handful of new rating and reviews over the last month, so we will read a few of those.
Yay.
First one is from Erica and Jesse at Paranerds Podcast with a 5-star rating.
Ooh, hello. Thank you.
They say, keep at it. Great stuff. We're fans and appreciate a truly binge-worthy pod. Erica and Jesse, Paranerds Podcast.
Awesome. Oh, so then I guess I'm number two.
Yeah.
So I have a 5-star also from Jamal from the Thanks for Coming podcast. And that's C-O-M-I-N-G, just so you know. And Jamal said, what a fun and interesting show this is. I discovered BSP over the summer and quickly fell in love with their conversation surrounding various phenomena topics. I really get a kick out of the supernatural sightings episodes and discussion because I've had some weird experiences in my life. So this pod validates my curiosity. Get into it, people. So, okay, so we just talked about listener stories, Jamal, and you've had some of your own experiences.
Send it in. So you can see
where I'm going. And then finally he says, I particularly like Cody and think he has a really sweet hiney.
Oh, whatever.
Jamal, that's so nice. Thank you so much.
Whatever. And the last one is for another 5-star rating from Janine at the Identity Podcast. Awesome pod. I can't get enough of this podcast. Lots of interesting content and the hosts are hilarious and play really well off one another.
They're okay.
Do yourself a favor and subscribe to this pod so you won't miss an episode. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. The Identity Podcast. Aw, my little pick me up. I love it.
Yeah. So that being said, if you're enjoying what you're listening to, just tell other people about it. Leave us a rating or review if you like. That would be awesome.
Yeah, please, please, please.
Yeah, and just follow us on all social network, basically, by searching BSPodPHX. Or if you have listener stories, please, we need Creep of the Week stories.
Yeah, give us some good ones.
Email us or just drop a voice memo through email at bspodphx@gmail.com.
Yay. I think it's like that thing where I'm sure of our listeners, at least half or more, even I have stories of things that I can't explain.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just that thing about actually reaching out. It's like sometimes it's hard, you know. So we love our stories. Hopefully we'll get some more. But as always, my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, are available. If you like podcasts, this goes tomorrow on March 31st. So just a couple of days after this drops, and I'll be posting this. I did an author host on a different podcast, and so if you want to hear an interview of me and books and reading, we have listeners who read, check that out.
Yeah.
That's all I got. Okay. Well, that's everything, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that was so fun. And the empanadas were so great. And this beer was good. So all around success.
Yay.
Well, everyone have a wonderful time. If you have poppet stories, I don't even know.
Tell us.
Let us know and kiss your poppets goodnight and bye. Bye.
See you again next time.